Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 346 of the Really Awful Movies podcast, Lake Mungo. A crazy, crazy title. It reminds me of this one-hit wonder English group from the 70s called Mungo Jerry. They had the song that went like, in the summertime when the weather is high, speaking of England, or what spurred discussion of this episode is one of our listeners from, I believe, southwest England, who goes by Bex, I guess, Rebecca. She was nice enough to post a picture of Death by Umbrella, Jeff and I's first book, and reach out, and so that was really cool, and we got into a little bit of a discussion, and she recommended this one, and glad she did, because it is a really unexpected treat. I guess I'm not exactly bearing the lead here when it comes to the podcast, but it's an unexpected treat, to say the least, because if you were to survey Jeff, and I believe there'd be a concurrence and overlap in this regard, but I think found footage and supernatural would be the subgenres of horror that we're least likely to gravitate towards. And when Lake Mungo is a combination of the two, I mean, you figure you're in for a world of hurt. I think the apotheosis of the supernatural horror genre is probably The Changeling by a hair. If you're disqualifying some of the more supernatural efforts from the Italians and the Mount Rushmore of the Italian directors, your Bavas, your Fulcis, and your Argentos and the like. But on these shores, I guess you could maybe throw in The Shining. I still hold it in very high regard. I think there's so much subtext, you know, some stuff that lurks beneath the surface for that one. But maybe The Changeling and The Shining and the supernatural side of things. Found footage, I guess you could subdivide it into maybe different types, because strictly speaking, if you have someone just filming their own exploits, I think it's a pretty terrible conceit, although you can throw that into the found footage, maybe POV or personal video operator type films, and that one you throw in the likes of Blair Witch, which I didn't care for too much, but I appreciated at the time the kind of sea change it ushered in. The remake was particularly terrible, and it was, I think, given the conceit used in both these films, I think they could have really gotten away with like a Lost in the Woods being preyed upon style movie, just a supernatural one, and made it more along the lines of maybe a Southern Comfort or Canadian Deliverance, like a Rituals, where just people are basically hanging out in the forest and picked off or attacked, or hell, Predator, if you want to expand the genre definitions. But I don't think having the point of view and having someone blubbering into a camera, especially while their lives are in danger, and upshots up the nostrils is a particularly compelling way to tell a story film-wise. If you want to throw in the just video footage type of movie, the summit of which would be probably Rec. And then in the true sense of the term, found footage would be like, so, oh, we've stumbled upon this crazy footage, what could it possibly be? And there you could have some genre overlap with the likes of Sinister with Ethan Hawke, where he plays a writer who's drawn slowly insane after he purchases a new home. A little bit of an analog to The Shining, but you could also throw in the Cannibal Holocaust, speaking of the Italians, which makes use of that conceit as well. I think Rec does it really splendidly because it puts it into the context of a news gathering organization, or ENG, electronic news, and has them film all the proceedings. Lake Mungo makes use of a different kind of found footage, kind of a POV conceit. It's one That's very similar to a movie that I've been really championing, and I've seen it. It's got really, really low ratings on IMDb, which I find kind of shocking, but it's called Head Cases, Serial Killer in the Delaware Valley. And that one uses a multimedia approach and I guess what some people call mockumentary, even though mock sounds like a term of derision and sounds like it's more something you'd see along the lines of this is Spinal Tap or something. But Head Cases uses a faux documentary to tell the story of I think it's Wayne Montgomery is the fake serial killer in question, but it has testimonials and one-on-one kind of disclosures about people's encounters with this person. And I think Delaware, right? So he killed whatever 20 or 30 people in the U.S. Northeast. So the Head Cases is a really, really underrated movie that really makes use of different media from different time periods. So the filmmakers incorporate audio testimonials, they have like grainy video, they have one-on-one testimonials that are like interviews, kind of a 48 hours mystery style. Similarly, Lake Mungo has very, very well documented, pardon the pun, documentary style engagement with its principals. It's done in a really, really good effect, and it can be quite difficult to act natural. What is that? Act naturally, isn't that the Ringo Starr song, that the Beatles covered? But when you have actors who are trying to portray people doing like a vox pop style of disclosure, it can be kind of tough to execute and not always consistent across. But Lake Mungo, I think it's a 2008 Australian effort, and it revolves around the death and of a young, I guess, college co-ed aged woman named Alice, and Alice Palmer, I believe. And her demise is mysterious, and her family questions what contributed to her passing on this mortal coil. But it really makes incredible use of the family members, and everyone gives like a testimonial as to her, I guess, final moments, and they use a combination of different types of media, different types of footage, whether it's audio, whether it's home video, and whether it's a camera, cell phone, grainy cell phone images. Another movie I forgot to mention in the found footage, I guess, video, self-operated video camcorder style mode, is America's Deadliest Home Videos. I want to say that's the title. It stars the 70s TV icon from the Partridge Family, Danny Bonaducci. It's from the 90s, and it has a kind of a Thelma and Louise, what's it called, Natural Born Killers kind of vibe, where you're brought into a group of killers and into their world through a third party. I can't recall if they were revealed. I think they were at some point. So obviously they're in cahoots with them, who documents their every move and their crime exploits. And I think to great effect. It's actually quite underrated. Maybe not the best thing I've ever seen, but it's really, really, really below the radar. And so it's in that style of people who document themselves. I think another one that has a documentary type feel, and you could blow the, we're really starting to expand the definition of what constitutes POV and found footage, but obviously the likes of a Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer is so impactful precisely because it adopts some of the conceits and the cliches and all that of the found footage and the documentary style horror. Another one I neglected to mention, I think a recent one that falls into this camp as well, would be the excellent, I mean phenomenal, Creep, which is a terrific 2014 vehicle whose name really, I mean, provides a lot, foreshadowing in spades for that one. I would probably put this one in that kind of level, because Lake Mungo is really captivating and provides lots of twists and turns, and the frights are really weighted toward the back end. So you have a wonderful slow burn where it makes you wonder, I think, for the first half hour, where it will actually be going, because, I mean, there's been such a spate of Netflix true crime documentaries that they're just almost a dime a dozen, and they play with the same tropes that have been batted around since the likes of your 48 Hours Mystery and 2020 and that Saturday night NBC and ABC true crime programming where you have a two-shot and a pensive, stentorian kind of fellow who just sort of nods, and tries to be all solemn when he hears recounts of awful doings to fellow human beings. That's a really strange type of filmmaking, but that's exactly what Lake Mungo does. But it does more than that, because it's not just how the immediate family was impacted by the demise of Alice Palmer in New South Wales, Australia. But it goes beyond that, because you're led into different ways that people of various sorts interacted with the victim. And on the one hand, you have her younger sibling, who is a budding filmmaker, naturally, I guess, right? And photographer. So he's been documenting certain things. And you get a kind of a paranormal activity kind of feel, where you have revelations of strange figures kind of lurking in the darkness. And that's maybe not the most effective, but there's also the consulting of a quote-unquote psychic, self-described, obviously, who goes by the name of Ray, who it turns out actually counseled the victim, I think several months before she passed, about her difficulties sleeping. Like, why she would consult a psychic is not really adequately probably explained, but it doesn't really matter. And you have this psychic doing this kind of paranormal investigations a la Poltergeist, and that kind of team there. Paranormal plays a big role in this, obviously, as it's a supernatural type film, but not strictly. And I think, to its credit, you can enjoy it on multiple levels. And I think it's really deftly handled how they weave in also a next door neighbor with whom the victim has had an affair. They found footage of sex tape. It's been revealed that the victim was in a threesome with a next door neighbor. And then obviously, when you have your motive, opportunity and means, the triumvirate of true crime, how to's and everything, well, definitely motive goes in there, because you have your jealousy, and maybe the wife was jealous of this young attractive brunette who lived next door, and it was that could have been something. But I thought this was really, really, really well handled. For someone who doesn't particularly care for the supernatural, at least in horror film storytelling, I do quite like it when it comes to these kind of YouTube rabbit holes and wormholes that you squirrel through. And I like, well, true crime, obviously, but I also like strange disappearances. And there's something eerie and fascinating and creepy about last images taken of people before they disappeared or were murdered and stuff. And what's particularly compelling is when they're shots taken right before someone's imminent demise, which I find extraordinarily creepy, but also somehow captivating. I was thinking too, there was a little bit of a Reddit mystery locally to localize this like a true journalist would, but it received coverage all around the globe and in the Daily Mail in the UK and stuff. But there's a region west of Toronto, and there's a city called Hamilton, and it's like a steel city a la Pittsburgh, or maybe some of the cities in the north of England. So it's, it was a struggling steel town. It's trying to reinvent itself. And that in the surrounding areas, you have a lot of waterfalls and a lot of, wonderful cliffs and hiking regions. And one of which is called Dundas Peak, is in the Dundas region of Ontario. And there was a famous or infamous photo of someone standing very, very creepily on what looks like a greater than 45 degree angle, very, very steep decline into this gorge. And there was much speculation on Reddit as well as all over the place as to how this person got there and how they would have rappelled themselves down to such a spot. But it looked like it could have been maybe a photographical, maybe artifact, or maybe someone was making some sort of stunt, but it has like a chimerical look to it. And that's what sort of I was thinking too with Lake Mungo, because this film, they make a lot of use of that. So you have these ghostly figures in the background where you don't exactly know what's going on and where you should be looking. And you have a certain graininess and sort of ephemeral, fleeting nature of some of these images. And that cuts across, again, as I said, cell phone video footage, and also one-on-one testimonials, and also stills and photography that was taken by the brother, who inserts himself into the mystery of his sister's death considerably. And at one point, I think her remains were actually moved, so it adds to the kind of the creepy, spooky feel to the whole production. And again, they have to solve what's happened and try and backtrack, and they sift through a bunch of evidence. It makes you wonder why the police wasn't really doing this. I guess that could be a debit here as we segue into what we've learned, but like why the authorities were not really investigating all these channels, because here you have the enterprising parents and brother and all these people, and the psychic who's almost a consultant. He's like a radio psychic, and people phone in to have their questions answered and whatnot, and all these people are banding together almost to solve an internet mystery. Well, not an internet mystery, but a mystery of someone's demise. It almost reminds me of the Netflix documentary Don't Mess with Cats, which is currently out now, where it has a kind of aggregate means of solving a mystery, and it makes you wonder what the police are up to in New South Wales that they're not doing this. So there's an example where I guess the titular Lake Mungo is a region here where I guess the deceased traveled a few days before her demise on a camping trip of some kind, and she seemed distressed, at least in the footage you see. And it's really realistic and really, really compelling. And the family actually retraces the victim's steps by going there not only during the day, I think in part, but also at night, to really get a feel of what she would have had to go through, because they do peruse footage from her phone and do see that she might have been involved in maybe someone being buried, or she seemed distraught, and she seemed to be in part of some I think some incline or some part. She was behaving somewhat strangely and broken away from her hard partying friends in, again, this Lake Mungo, wherever Lake Mungo is. Another thing I've learned is that, I mean, you have this singular entity, and like sui generis, this type of work that really fuses expertly these two very disparate, or can be disparate, genres. Paranormal Activity really brought it back into the public's attention, but there are different ways that this has been done, and I don't think particularly effectively, because a lot of those productions, when they used the found footage and they had the paranormal investigators, whether it be the likes of Poltergeist or any of these films, they tend to pull punches a lot. And there's a certain kind of a PG-13 vibe to it. And here, I think with the sex tape and with the general overall creepiness and how the tension is ratcheted up, I think it really stands apart from those other efforts. And I think also just the verisimilitude of having the testimonials and the one-on-one documentary feel gives it that Texas Chainsaw Massacre in-your-face kind of really hyper-realistic Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer type vibe. And I think that's what makes this one really, really stand out and makes it, again, singular and really outstanding. I don't know because I still shy from really, really being too into these types of movies, but I'm going to probably give it close to 4 out of 5 on our rating scale here. Another thing I've learned, I'm going to switch the setup here of our podcast structure a little bit and play around with it for a little bit, but I learned that I think Joel Anderson is the director's name, and he's an Aussie, and this is his only film by the looks of it, and I don't think he really followed up with anything, and there was a bit of a mystery, speaking of mysteries, as to what happened to him and why after this, I mean, critically lauded effort, and deservedly so, I think in the 90s in Rotten Tomatoes, and that why he didn't follow it up with something else. Or maybe this was, a way he sort of blew his load creativity-wise and really felt like he couldn't really... Or maybe it was like a very personal film to him and he didn't feel like he could expand beyond its reaches. But I'd be very curious to know. Maybe we'll reach out to our buddy Brian Trenchard-Smith, who wrote the foreword to our book, The Strike of the Panther and Stunt Rock Director, who wrote the really great foreword to our latest book, Mine's Bigger Than Yours, The 100 Wackiest Action Movies. We'll sort of see if he can do some digging on our behalf in the film world down under and see if what happened to this. And we would like to maybe reach out to him. I think others have tried as well, maybe YouTube critics and whatnot, and to see what makes him tick and what's behind this really, really interesting and really very well-executed production, and something that I didn't think I would necessarily take to in the way that I did. But boy, those last 30 minutes are something out of this world. I think you could probably knock a half a star off, depending on your proclivities and predilections for watching these kinds of like 48 hours mystery type programs or unsolved mysteries or that kind of thing. But boy, if you're into those kinds of true crime and that kind of thing, I mean, you'll really get a lot out of this film. And there have been some really, really exemplary Australian horrors. I think, I want to say it's, I can't recall if it's Hunting Ground or Killing Ground, but I wrote it up on the Really Awful Movies site. You can check that out. I really should look it up, but I try and keep my discussions very extemporaneous and very freewheeling here, and I don't want to seem like I'm reading off some sort of Wikipedia page. So I take a few notes and just sort of speak freely to the best of my abilities. But I want to say it's Killing Ground. It's this absolutely incredible camping revenge movie from Australia that's out of this world. Of course, Picnic at Hanging Rock is outstanding. Peter Weir film from way back in the day, and there's tons of great Aussie films, and I'm not sure whether Jeff and I have actually gone down. We probably have. I mean, we definitely discussed some Brian Trenchard Smith's work we owe him, as he's been so great to us, but it wasn't in the horror space. And I would have liked to have Jeff on the discussion here too, because he spent several months in Australia and really knows the country and would have been able to offer some really good insights as to how the cultural sensibilities underpin this kind of film, and that would have been really handy to have. Now, thanks again to Bex. It's almost like Posh and Bex, except with the genders reversed, kind of. But yeah, Rebecca was nice enough to again post something on Instagram about our Death by Umbrella horror book, so it's really cool to have someone out in England listening. And it's funny, like Jeff and I were in England, although when you visit London, it's almost like when you're a traveler visiting New York and thinking you're visiting the U.S. You really aren't. You're just, we were in London, and we don't even feel like we know London that well. We're in, like, Dalston and Brixton and I think Hampstead and all these places, but I feel like it's going to take five more visits even just to get London down pat. But we certainly did not get the England experience. But interested listeners can check out our podcast recording of Hands of the Ripper, which is another entry in the long, lengthy filmography of Jack the Ripper-inspired movies that we actually recorded in London's West End, kind of near, Albert's Hall, I think. So somewhere near Notting Hill and that. So Jeff and I did one of the cottage industry Jack the Ripper tours back then. But I digress. Thanks again, Rebecca, for this wonderful suggestion. Really, really amazing, amazing stuff. And the performances are really top drawer. Especially, I think the film benefits from having this really strong psychic character who has an amazing backstory, because he's again worked with the deceased, and he's a bit shady. He's a psychic, so it stands to reason. But he's also changed his name because for some reason, this is a fun little detail, Ray sounded kind of trustworthy, and I'm like, okay, does it? I'm not sure. But yeah, he really inserts himself into the family's lives, and there's a fantastic closing scene too, and obviously no spoiler, but it's really jarring, and it could have left the door open for a sequel, depending on where Mr. Anderson is, the auteur behind this film. But it really rewards prolonged attention, because you'll be prompted maybe to turn it off in the 20-minute mark. But then if you're patient and forgiving enough, you'll really, really be rewarded with the last 45 minutes that really, really dials up the tension to the nth degree. I mean, my God, this is not something you really want to watch on your own. And it has it's one of the few paranormal investigator type movies that really resonated with me, because again, that's something that a genre where people tend to pull their punches. So I guess this discussion kind of proves that found footage, broadly speaking, or POV or documentary style, can be used in so many different ways. And at its core is obviously a cost saving, and it's a way to just tell stories without having to be overly invested in tracking shots and aerial shots and this. And basically it's the most accessible type of filmmaking that almost anyone can do, but that doesn't mean anyone can do it right. As maybe viewers of the Rec remake that starred that, I always call her that woman from Dexter because I never remember her name, but it was just an appalling remake of the singular Spanish film Rec, and which was really self-contained, again, journalism-driven horror film that was really very impactful and effective. And there was a time, I believe, in the mid-2000s where they were just a dime a dozen, and there's a different found footage film sent, like released into the, you know, subjected, I guess people were subjected to them at out of control rate. And at the time, maybe in the 2010s, it would have been around where Jeff and I were receiving a lot of these films for review and engaging with different production companies and filmmakers to get coverage and write up reviews. And there were, not a week went by without getting one of these films. But again, at least there are a few standouts, and that would be your Head Cases movie, and this one for sure. And Cannibal Holocaust, although that churns a lot of stomachs, falls into that camp broadly so. But maybe it deserves a little bit more credit than I've been giving it, probably because of that spate of dreck that came out at the time, but used in small doses and not enough so that it makes the viewer sick. I think it's an incredible way to tell a story, and I think it can be very, very, very effective. So 4-star, maybe 3.75, maybe 3.5 for Lake Mungo. The title, Don't Let It Dissuade You. Don't let the setup dissuade you. Don't let the subgenre dissuade you if, like us, you're tend to shy away from these types of productions. So anyway, we shall be back to it shortly. We've got a lot of stuff in the hopper. Jeff and I have been watching Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker, which is a weird, odd film from the 80s that has a lot of strange sexual politics and has a poster that basically rips off Prom Night with a knife glistening. It's really batshit and really bizarre, but there's been a lot of other bonkers films that we're watching as well, and it's been a nice distraction while I've suffered the slings and arrows of being a Germany supporter for this Euro Cup, because that team is right garbage and is probably going to be ousted by the next time I record an episode. But it's a bit of a strange change of pace when one of the stalwarts of global football has been reduced to a quivering, cautious, lousy team that's making me mutter under my breath in German about how, you know, and complaining about them while I'm taken to the patios to check out some of their games. But anyway, it's been great to watch a bunch of horror. It's been nice to explore options on Tubi as well, and all the litany and the treasure trove of streaming services that are making movies more accessible to all, especially some of these classics like, soon to be or could be a cult classic, Lake Mungo. Certainly it speaks well of Australian filmmaking, that's for sure. Anyway, we shall talk to you soon. Take care.